south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander, my thoughts ever stray.
Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you what it's really like to live, work, play, and or retire in Latin America. I tell it just like it is, so let's get started. Before I get started today, I want to remind you that my Expat Wisdom Latin American Insider Seminar, God, that's a lot of words, is open for registration. I'm recording this show a week before it goes out, and I know as of this recording, the seminar's more than half filled already. So do sign up to make sure you get a spot, all right? Just head over to expatwisdom.com for all the details. All right, enough said about that. Let's get on with the show. Now, like I say, one of the best ways to get initiated into the expat life is to get a hold of a big city Latin American newspaper and start reading. I always recommend that as a first step to all you expat wannabes up there in Cleveland contemplating your next move. And nowadays, with the internet, you don't even have to spend a nickel. And by the way, the average price for any Latin American newspaper, no matter how big or small, is anywhere from 25 to 40 cents. And remember, unlike the first world, physical newspapers are not dying at all. They've got a huge lag time going. Sure, they all have internet versions, but they don't seem to be making a dent in the circulation down here. And that's because only 15 to 20% of all Latin Americans have internet in the home. Now I ask you, knowing that the internet hasn't penetrated much at all down here, can't you just smell the opportunities? Anyway, you should download one or more of the big Latin American newspapers from the internet and start reading. Pick one of the medium or large cities in the country that you think you might be interested in relocating to and get started. And like I always suggest, if your Spanish sucks, start with the classifieds or the real estate ads. And remember, anytime you get stuck, you can paste a paragraph or a whole article into Google Translate and you're off. So no excuses. It's a no-brainer, really. Now, over the years, I've gotten a lot of emails from people who've tried this, and they always say it's been great, and it's helped them a lot. Not only do they get the local and the national news, they get to find out exactly what the cost of living is like in their area of choice, because there's ads all the time for produce and TVs and washing machines, you name it. But I have to warn you, when you first start reading these papers, if you know a little more than Taco Bell Spanish, it's going to scare the pants off of you. And I'll tell you why in a second. What I'm saying is, first world would-be expats, you know, expat wannabes, are normally pretty shocked, since the headline stories don't much resemble first world paper headline stories at all. But if a Latin American were to pick up that newspaper, it just wouldn't faze him a bit. In fact, like any red-blooded male, he'll scan the first few pages and head right over to the sports section. But I said if you're a first world person, the news will scare the pants off you. And why is that? Well, I just happen to have a newspaper right in front of me here. Yesterday's news in Tegucigalpa, Honduras. Now, this is for a typical day, a Thursday. Nothing special about this, but listen as I read through the headlines of this paper. And after I'm finished, you tell me what you think of Honduras, okay? Then I'll tell you what it's really like. Now, Honduras, as you may or may not know, has a population of about a little over 8 million. With Tegucigalpa the largest city, and naturally with an unpronounceable name like that, Tegucigalpa, expats just shorten it to Tegucy, or Goosey, just like they shorten Guatemala to Guate. And if you want my opinion, I don't recommend the place for expats because it's awful ugly, and it's very polluted. Though it is actually in the Altiplano, so the weather is quite nice. It's about 4,000 or 5,000 feet up, but it doesn't have much else going for it at all. Not for us expats, anyway. And crime? Oh, yeah, they got crime, all right. But, like all so-called dangerous big cities, it's got its nice little districts or zones that are completely safe. Places where wealthier people, expats, and gringos hang out and live. Little first-world-like islands of tranquility. And if you keep a low profile like I always recommend, you won't have any problems. And since Tegucy and practically all of Honduras is way off the gringo tourist trail, that gringo advantage is alive and well, believe me. And by the way, I actually do like a lot of places in Honduras for expat living. However, Tegucigalpa is not one of them. So anyway, I've got this Tegucigalpa daily newspaper in my hand. And since Tegucy is the biggest city in Honduras, we're going to find out a lot about the country in general as we read the first few pages. At least, that's what you'd assume, right? Well, get ready to be amazed and scared, because here goes. The big story on the front page is how all the presidents and vice presidents and congressmen in Central America have gotten together at a seminar, some kind of conference. The big announcement is that they need more first world money because the war on drugs is just not working. Yeah, it took a 3-day pig out in a 5-star hotel to come up with that amazing conclusion, right? And let me tell you that every day in every Latin American newspaper, on the front page, there's some kind of story about drugs. Whether it's a plane that crashed with 30 kilos, a boat loaded with pot that washed up on shore, the discovery of some clandestine lab, or some hidden airfield landing strips up in the mountains. You get these stories every day. And because Central America is a big drug corridor to the U.S., practically every day newspapers are reporting on international conferences held in 4- and 5-star hotels down here, the general theme always being some crap title like Implementing New Strategies in the Drug War. And these big international 5-star pig outs are always sponsored by the U.S. or the U.N. In other words, your tax dollar in the crapper again. These pathetic conferences are really nothing but an expensive photo op and get-together for lard-ass politicians. And these days, it seems like every other 5-star hotel seminar is about money laundering, always sponsored by the U.S. government, the IMF, or the World Bank, even giant corrupt institutions like Citibank. Who would believe that all these huge international conferences are held off the tourist trail, way off the tourist trail? Now I ask you, if the U.S. State Department says it's so dangerous down here, then why do lard-ass politicians like Hillary Clinton and U.N. genital heads like Kofi Annan come down here for a meet-and-greet and to party first class, with their massive entourages, of course? Doesn't that seem the least bit ironic to you? Do they know something about these horribly dangerous third-world countries that we don't? Yeah, they know that in every third-world big city, there are luxury first world areas where they can hang out. Yeah, that's right. And the press releases say they come down here to croak about all the good they're doing in the drug war and to hand out more money to corrupt third world bureaucrats. Well, that's not exactly what the press releases say, but we know better. It's all about rubbing shoulders with other jerks in 5-star hotels and photo ops to make the ignorant public think they're actually making a dent in the drug war. And though down here, the first few pages of every newspaper are just filled with that dribble, no one that's not on the receiving end of first world money ever actually reads those articles. None of us expats ever do, unless we need to induce vomiting. And really, the only time those international conventions get any traction at all, I mean the only time the average person pays attention, is when some Latin American president or vice president or senator, they call them diputados down here, calls for the general legalization of drugs or the lowering of penalties. Then the common man actually starts paying attention, and some people actually read the articles, because everybody's hoping and praying that that'll actually happen. So when a politician makes a statement like that to the press down here, the public actually thinks there's a sliver of a chance that legalization or decriminalization might actually be in the works. But us expats know it's just a political ploy. They're just posturing to get more free money, some more aid from the first world. And a large piece of any first world aid always goes to the politicians in charge, and then on to their friends, families, and relatives. That's just the way it works down here. Why do you think these guys go into politics in the first place? When they start out young and they politic for a lowly local office, most of them don't have a pot to pee in. Then, as they work their way up through the system and learn the ropes, and they become mayor and alderman and diputado or cabinet member or any one of the hundreds of high-paying posts the public doesn't even know about, why do you think these guys retire with fleets of SUVs, million-dollar houses, offshore corporations and bank accounts, a half a dozen bodyguards, helicopters, private planes, and a beautiful young mistress or two holed up in a penthouse apartment? Remember, that's the way the top 100 or so politicians in any Latin American country live. Now, unless their daddy was a corrupt politician and greased the skids for them, like Mayor Daley in Chicago, these Latin scumbags walk into politics without a pot to pee in, and they walk out like Saudi princes. These are poor third world countries, and tax collections are very low. Now, you don't think there's enough money in the public trough to support that kind of lifestyle for 100 or so politicians, do you? And to support all the auxiliary parasites around them, you know, their cronies, families, and friends. That's just not possible. The tax collections are way too low. In Latin America, there's only a few ways to support a lifestyle of a Saudi prince. Well, you can do it by skimming a portion of those multi-million, even billion-dollar aid checks that the First World, namely the U.S. government, doles out for the war on drugs. Because you see, any deal a president of a Latin country makes with the U.S. government to bring in more troops or technology or training for the drug war, that always comes attached to a nice big check for humanitarian aid. And you know, that's supposed to go to help the common man. Infrastructure, healthcare, education, clean water and indoor plumbing and stuff. But here's the catch. Big aid packages like that aren't administered by the U.S. government. That's not their job at all. In fact, they don't want any part of it. Those programs are administered by the usual government bureaucrats. And who do you think they give those hospital and school and building and road contracts to? Their friends and relatives and buddies, and they always skim a piece off for themselves. A nice big fat piece. That's the deal. And all these high-level politicians are taking a piece from the narcos, too. So they're on a couple of different payrolls, really. How do you think it's possible for there to be an estimated 250 clandestine airstrips in northern Honduras alone? In fact, I could go on Google Earth and spot a few for myself right now. Anyone can if they know what they're looking for. And remember, Google Earth for us lesser mortals has very low resolution. Imagine how much more you could see if you had the government version of Google Earth. Or how about Defense Department spy satellites? So you have to wonder, if they're so obvious to casual observers, why aren't they regularly being rooted out and busted? Well, that just wouldn't be good for the drug war now, would it? You know why just a few token airstrips get discovered each year? Because the narcos pay off high-level politicians and high-level military guys to look the other way. And by the way, if you go on Google Earth, you can spot airstrips in Belize, Guatemala, Honduras, Panama, in virtually every Central and South American country. And believe me, these aren't airstrips for a cattleman's Piper Cub or Cessna either. These are narrow lines cut deep in the heart of the jungle, where no normal pilot or commercial airline would ever land. Way off the beaten track, far from any paved roads. And that's the whole point, you know? And you know, when you do see in the paper down here that a landing strip like that's been discovered, they always say it's a, quote, abandoned airstrip, unquote. I mean, they never catch a plane landing on one of these things. No one's ever caught red-handed in an actual drop. You'd think with all that millions, even billions in technology that the U.S. donates to all these third world countries, you know, the Sidewinder radars and the infrared and the night vision and the drones, you've heard about it all. Well, it's all down here all right, but it doesn't seem to be doing jack feces. All they can find is the occasional abandoned airstrip. Very convenient, isn't it? Sure, they keep finding kilos and kilos of drugs found in gas tanks and trucks and stuff, but that doesn't take any high technology to find. In fact, one of the inside guys at the U.S. Embassy in Honduras told me nearly all the drug busts down here, big and small, aren't picked up by some sophisticated technology. They're caught because of a tip-off, because someone squealed. And all those airport busts where people have kilos strapped to their legs and they swallow capsules of cocaine and stuff, well, there's always a certain amount of that, and people get caught all the time because airport cops and security know how to catch that stuff. They know just what to look for. But the airport confiscations are really low volume, actually pretty insignificant. A single bus is usually grams to up to a kilo at max. The real big shipments are coming through by plane and boat, and they get through because the politicians, the cops, and the military are paid to look the other way. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't believe at all in this drug war crap. I think they should just legalize it all. I mean, it virtually is legal in most Latin American countries. And it's really dirt cheap. Whatever you can buy it for in the States, you can buy it down here for 5 or 10% of that cost. And since they practically never prosecute users down here, so why aren't the streets then virtually filled with hundreds of scavenging drug addicts 24/7? There's just none of that. And why? Because drug addiction is self-limiting. It's like one Nobel Prize-winning social psychologist once said. He said, if you suddenly made cigarettes free, I mean, you put them on street corners in barrels and let people take as many as they want, you'd still only have about 5 or 6% of the population smoking. The rest of the people won't even be tempted because it's just not their thing. Sure, a lot more people would sample them in the beginning, but after a little while, after a few months, it would slip back down to the 5 or 6% point. So basically, the higher level politicians and high-ranking military guys in Latin America have gotten rich off the drug war. It's a great deal for them because they're making money off of both sides. But like every pig in the pig pen, slashing around with their own kind, the object is to grow bigger and fatter, and there's never enough slop for everyone. That's when these guys come out in public and say, the drug war is just not working. Maybe we should look at legalization or dropping the penalties. Which brings an immediate knee-jerk reaction from the first world, who also need that drug war money and all those billion-dollar contracts to keep flowing. And they're more than happy to shut up any politician that's talking legalization. They just shut his mouth with money and a fresh injection of funds for so-called humanitarian purposes, distributed through local governmental departments, of course. You get the picture. All right, but back to the headlines. I'm looking at the headline on page 2 now. It's reporting on a new session of the Honduran Congress and how a proposed law on anti-corruption within the government itself, a so-called Illicit Enrichment Act, was basically killed for about the 15th consecutive time. And no wonder why it never passes. It's aimed directly at rooting out corrupt congressmen and bureaucrats, just exactly what the act proposes to stamp out. Illicit enrichment in politics. And that would virtually stop the gravy train. Can't have that now, can we? I mean, that's the reason why you go into politics in the first place now, isn't it? And it says here that for the last 15 years, every Congress that's been in session has proposed a law on anti-corruption. There's always one or maybe two honest politicians in Congress now, and they're the ones that propose acts like that. Then it gets in the news for a couple of weeks, and a lot of empty speeches are made too. And then it gets slapped down hard. And in 15 years, it's never passed. It's never gotten close. It's always tabled or killed before it gets any traction at all. And along with that proposed bill that got killed, it says here a related proposed bill has died a quick death here too. It was a proposal to strip congressional and presidential immunity. Now, let me explain that for a second. Once you become a diputado or a congressman or a cabinet member or a president or vice president, any of the high-level political offices, you have complete immunity from prosecution for any crime you may have committed while in office. Now, when expats first hear about this, they're dumbfounded. How could there be immunity for crimes committed while you're in office? How does something like that even get on the books? I mean, it's a virtual get-out-of-jail-free card, and it's used all the time. It's a gift that politicians have given themselves. It's the gateway to graft and corruption. And that's why these guys want to stay in office forever, until they're dead. And they usually do. That's pretty common. Because once they're out of office, they lose that immunity. But once they're out of office, all that really means is they're off the gravy train. Sure, they lose their immunity from prosecution, but the majority of all corruption occurs while a politician's in office. Obviously, that's the only time he's got access to the public trough. So anyway, on the second page of the newspaper, you can see how hard Congress is working to protect the gravy train. That seems to be the main focus of government in the first world and down here, to protect that gravy train. Oh, and by the way, all Latin American governments have that same get-out-of-jail-free card immunity. And only in the most severe cases has it ever been stripped from someone. For example, just recently, the last head of the Congress in Guatemala, that would be like the Speaker of the House in the United States. Anyway, he and his staff were caught stealing $11 million, which they shipped off to a Caribbean offshore bank account. Anyway, apparently this must have offended some of the other politicians who didn't have their hand in that trough, so he was stripped of his immunity and was sentenced just this week to 2 years in the pen. 2 commutable years. That means he'll be out in about 3 months. Oh, and I forgot, the money is still missing and reportedly unrecoverable. And the reason why these guys get such light sentences when they are picked up and prosecuted is because they're the ones that stacked the legal system when they were in office. They got their buddies and cronies appointed to judgeships. So what do you think is going to happen when you come up in front of one of these guys? For example, in the case of this politician I was just talking about, the one that helped steal that $11 million, do you know what the judge did? The one that gave him the 2 years in jail? Oh, he slapped his hand all right. He gave him that 2 years in jail plus a fine of $1,500. And about that $11 million that he stole? Well, that's a nice retirement package when he gets out in a couple of months now, isn't it? Now I ask you, would you do 2 years in jail if you knew when you got out you'd get $11 million? And like I said, it really won't be 2 years, more like just a couple of months. And he won't be in with the general population. He'll have his own little apartment with a stove, refrigerator, and TV and all that stuff. And his own maid and a bodyguard or two. That's the way Latin prisons are when you have the cash. But that's a subject for another show. And believe me, I have got some emails about that. Johnny, what's it like in a Latin American prison? Like, I'm supposed to know because I was there, right? Do they know something that you don't? No, just kidding. And you know, there's another thing that always confounds us expats. When we see cases like this, and there are a lot of them, when high-level government guys, you know, senators, vice presidents, presidents, and cabinet members and such, after they've been out of office for a few years, it's discovered that they've stolen some millions of dollars. And you just wouldn't believe how often that happens. In fact, not a day goes by when you don't read about such stuff in the daily newspapers. Anyway, it always confounds us expats when we hear that they picked up the guy living in some luxury neighborhood or resort somewhere in his home country. I mean, these guys operate with such impunity that they go ahead and steal millions of dollars and don't even flee the country. And you know what Expat Eddie says? Sure, they stole from the public trough, but at least they're helping out the local economy. You know, keeping the public money circulating. And Eddie's got a point there. I mean, if he was in the south of France or Monaco somewhere spending that dough, he wouldn't be creating local jobs at all now, would he? And another thing, the wealthy neighbors know what's going on. When one of these ex-diputados or vice presidents moves into one of their luxury subdivisions or builds a million-dollar beach house next to theirs, you know, with bodyguards, SUVs, and a helicopter or two, the neighbors know he's paying for all that with stolen public money or narco money. But the neighbors keep their mouths shut. Why? Because these guys, even when out of office, have friends in high places. And the rich guys in those subdivisions, the wealthy guys that made their money in business the hard way, they don't want any trouble with these ex-politicos who, with a phone call, could do big damage to the most legitimate of businesses. You know what I mean? Maybe sic their version of the IRS on him, or cancel or pull his import-export license. These guys who've spent their lives in politics can really play dirty. How do you think they've managed to stay in office with all those other snakes vying for a place at the same trough? That's why these guys in and out of office walk around like Saudi princes. Oh, and here's another recent story I think you'll like. A notorious ex-vice president who served 3 years in prison when he got caught diverting a few million dollars to him and his buddy and his family's accounts when that money was supposed to go to a housing project for the poor. Anyway, they took his immunity away from him for a while and he did 3 years in prison. A Club Med-style prison, of course. But when he got out, and never returned the millions, of course, a funny thing happened to him. And it happens to all high-level political ex-cons. They become local celebrities. The money that's gone missing never seems to surface. It's always shifted out of the country. Though, as I said before, they like to stick around themselves because they have such huge egos and they so much enjoy being public figures. And for some strange reason, the Latin American voting public are stupider about their thieving ex-politicians than any other class of people I've ever met. For example, about 3 months ago, I was actually in Walmart myself when I saw that very guy, that ex-con vice president, walking with his two bodyguards down the aisles of Walmart, selecting expensive things, with his big black disgusting Hummer double parked outside, blocking the handicapped parking zone. And do you think any of the parking lot guards would ask him to move? No way. Instead, they treated him like royalty. One of them actually grinning a big grin like a fool and shaking hands with that disgusting piece of feces. And by the way, as he walked like a prince through that Walmart, people kept nodding at him politely like a visiting dignitary. And I happened to be standing right behind him in the checkout line, him and his two fat bodyguards. And I did comment to the cashier quite loudly in Spanish so that political scumbag could hear. I said, "I'm surprised a nice first world store like this would allow the criminal element to shop here." But the cashier just gave me a funny look. He didn't get it. And the scumbag ex-political ignored my remark and continued his princely stroll. I know he heard me. At least I got that much satisfaction. And as he walked out, people nodded and said buenos dias. And not one of these people, who he'd stolen millions from, bothered to give him the least bit of grief about it. Of course, I never really expected them to mouth off, spit in his eye, or even give him the cold shoulder. Latins never do. They're just way too polite to confront jerks like that to their faces. Or I should say there's more of a kind of a disconnect. They don't connect that the politicians are stealing actually from them, their tax dollars and international donations. The public doesn't connect those dots at all. Because in the third world, the politicians never do anything for the public anyway. What Latin citizens get, they have to work for themselves. The public money just doesn't filter down. So when a politician steals millions, citizens don't get outraged. Or they do just for the moment and then it fades away fast. Because they don't see any effect either way. Public services and social programs still suck. In other words, the public doesn't connect the fact that they're being stolen from. It's like the politicians live in a completely different world from them, and of course they do. And that's why the general public treats politicians, even the ones that get caught stealing millions, like celebrities. I've learned that over the years. Latins in public are nice and polite about practically everything. Even when they've been crapped on over and over again, in the end, many of them actually politely thank you. And I see that all the time in department stores, too. A person will walk in, ask for some help or try to return something, or just go to customer service. By the way, Eddie calls it customer disservice. Anyway, in the end, many times you get no satisfaction at all. It was just a complete waste of time. And even with all that wasted time, there will be smiles and thank yous all around. And I think in some ways that greases the wheels of a dysfunctional society. And you know, based on my run-in with that crooked politician, it might sound like I'm pretty hard on the Latin public, but me and all my expat friends really like the idea that the society is so happy, polite, and courteous. I tell you, that goes a long way when you're in a society with politicians that are so corrupt. And with the citizens, the common man, the politeness is not fake. They're not putting on a show. For example, like I experienced when I took a trip to Asia. It seemed like there was always something behind that smile. Something that wasn't right. But even so, I still prefer Asia to France, where you get a double whammy. Bad customer service and bad manners. Well, I guess you can't have it both ways, huh? But back to the newspaper. Now I'm on page 3, where we have another report from a big convention center where a bunch of worthless politicians from the U.S. and Latin America are again wining and dining at a 5-star hotel discussing drug war strategies. What else is new? And by the way, I bet you didn't even know they had luxury 5-star hotel complexes in the third world. Well, believe me, they've got hundreds of them here. Oops, I just noticed I'm at the end of the program. I'll continue this next time, and I promise it gets really interesting.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, coming to you each week from somewhere south of the border. And don't forget, you can email me on anything at all about Latin America, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture.